Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Craig Ruffalo, Vice President Jeanne Flavelle, stepping in for our fearless leader, Mike Coughlin, today. Welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast. Today is October 16th, 2020, and I'm joined by our fearless expert in the cocoa and chocolate world, Jeffrey Rosinski. How are you? Happy Friday, Jeffrey.
Happy Friday to you, Craig. Nice to be with you.
Yeah. Well, crazy days as typical. We're 1 week away from Halloween. Is there anything going on your way with people decorating outside? You know, my son and I have a tradition, and we did decorate. We've got a absolute, I'll call it a theme for 2020. And it is basically a cemetery. We have graves, we have dead people walking around, zombies. Kind of just reminds me of the apocalypse, to tell you the truth.
Well, I miss those days. I've got my son is in college age at this point, so you're in that peak time period where your kids are still at home and they're still probably trick-or-treating and trying to get together with friends. But it's pretty out here in the Northeast. The leaves are starting to turn colors and fall down, so we're going to be going into peak in another couple of weeks here. And yeah, we're 14 days away from Halloween and an upcoming presidential election in the Ivory Coast.
Man, that is going to be some kind of election. You think our elections are crazy. You can only imagine what's going on there.
Well, there's a lot of parallels in the two. So you've got the current incumbent president, Alassane Ouattara, who has kind of cleared the path to seeking a third term in office after his logical successor passed away back in July, his foreign minister, Koulibaly. And they've done a lot to try to block any potential rival. And now you've got some of the people who are the rivals who are protesting by boycotting the upcoming election just because they feel like it's rigged. But yeah, it could be contentious. Certainly, we've got a lot of, we've got a heated election here in the U.S. And I think there's a lot of parallels to what we're seeing here in the U.S. versus what we're seeing over in Ivory Coast right now from a presidential standpoint.
So with that, Jeffrey, does the cocoa industry down in the Ivory Coast, obviously being the dominant producer, how is that impacting the arrivals as we get into the main crop, I guess, huh?
Well, we're just started, so we're only literally 2 weeks into it, and I'd hate to call the horse race in the first 15 seconds just when the gates open.
Oh my gosh.
But what I will say is the crop year that we just finished, which was the 1920 crop year, so that's the one that went from October last year through the end of September. So we've got the final tally there, and I've totaled everything up for Ivory Coast and Ghana. Not that they're the only two countries that grow cocoa around the world, but they are two dominant ones that account for 65, maybe 70% of the total global production. And we were down about 180,000 metric tons, which in a normal year would have been enough, I think, to throw this market into disarray and get us into a real bull rally. But the fact that the grinds and demand has been somewhat anemic and sluggish because of what we're seeing in COVID year to date, I think has really been the kind of the opposing force on that equation.
Yeah, I saw that you had sent out to the group here at McKinney some of the grind numbers. They look pretty pathetic, to say the least, in just about every origin and every major grinding country. Why don't you walk us through some of the major grind areas and tell us a little bit about what you think the natural impact on cocoa and chocolate was with that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. And I'll do them in chronological order because they did get released this week just for the audience's benefit. So the grind or the demand in cocoa is released on a quarterly basis from all the major reporting regions. The first major reporting to release what is the biggest, and that was Western Europe. And that came out at the very early part of this week. Third quarter grind was 345,730 metric tons. Our forecast was that they were going to come in down 6% for the third quarter, and in reality, they came in down 4.7%, so it was negative, but maybe not as bad as people had presumed. That brings us on a crop year basis, and I like to look at grinds on a crop year basis because I think it matches up then discreetly against the actual underlying production or the production cycle, the crop cycle. So crop year to date, which would be October through the end of September, so it'd be four quarters or an annualized 12 months, they were down 3.4%. The next major reporting region was North America, the region that we're in. My forecast for the third quarter was down 7.6%, and we actually came in on an adjusted basis down 4.02%. So what they did is they changed the third quarter of last year. They bumped that up higher. We came in at 118,260 metric tons, which was down 4%, which brings us on a crop year basis down 6.3% for the 12-month continuous time period.
I'm sensing a theme here.
Yeah, a lot of red tape. And then finally, the last major reporting region, Malaysia, announced earlier in the week, but I'll jump ahead and just talk about Asia as a whole, which combines Malaysia and Indonesia together. My forecast was they're going to be down 6.8%, and they actually came in at a dismal 10.1%, and that brings them up, and that's one of the worst reporting quarters they've had in about 5 years. You've got to go back all the way to 2015 to find a quarter that was as equally bad and a negative double-digit number. Crop year-to-date basis, they're down 2.2%, and they came in at 202,665 metric tons. So, yeah, really, wow. Really not good numbers. Third negative quarter in a row for Asia. The fifth quarter in a row out of North America that was a negative number, and Western Europe third quarter with a negative number. So everything, I tallied everything up across all the major reporting regions. The only area of the world that's growing is GPEX. That's Western Africa. And their growth, they reported 9 months of 2020, so January through September, they were up a nominal 0.8%. But it brings the total globe, by my estimations, down 2.9% year on year for the total world in terms of total grind or chocolate consumption.
Well, that's not healthy. I mean, goodness gracious, we think about normal consumer patterns. And as we all look at ourselves during the last 6 months, just yourselves and out there in the audience as to what your eating habits are. And, we've talked about a lot of the ways that people start to change a little bit of their snacking habits or their eating habits based upon maybe comfort foods that would bring them back to feeling something more positive than all the things that they've been handed with, all the different problems that we see around the world. And I would have thought maybe chocolate would be one of those wonderful little indulgences that we can see. But apparently, from what you're telling me, we've either had so much stockpiled already, or the fact is people just aren't eating as much chocolate, at least during the last 12 months. What's your feeling on that one, particularly focus on maybe the North America market? But I do want to get back to that Asia number, worst in 5 years. That's crazy. But first, a little bit about North America on that grind number that you're mentioning. What's your feeling on that as far as chocolate demand goes?
Yeah, good question, Craig. So you actually mentioned two interesting things. The first is a drawdown in stocks. And then the second is, what does actual chocolate consumption look like in this COVID environment now that we're, more than 6 months into a lot of these stay-at-home orders? On the stock number, I would say that global cocoa processing margins have been declining. We've seen an erosion in the butter ratio, cake ratio, and powder prices have been climbing, albeit not as fast as butter is falling. And that implies that the margins that a processor is recouping are declining. And they're getting to kind of piecemeal levels where you're going to start to see a shut-in of capacity. So I think people have been more more incentivized at this point to burn existing stocks rather than make new, because the margins are not that great right now. And that number, in my opinion, is very evidenced by what you're seeing in Asia, which is typically a big part of the world that exports a lot of block natural cocoa butter and block natural cake, kibbled cake around the world. And as they produce less, and other parts of the globe are their grinding is holding up better than you're seeing in Asia. In my opinion, that hints that you're seeing a decline in stocks around the world. In terms of overall chocolate consumption, I think a good way to measure that would be take a look at sugar deliveries segment by segment. You can take a look at sugar deliveries specifically going into the confectionery market on a season-to-date basis. And I believe that number's down around 13.9, 14%. as measured October through Yikes. August. And you've got to keep in mind when people are making candy ahead of the Halloween season, they're going to be making it now to make sure it's distributed in stores through 3PL warehouses so the consumers can actually buy and stock up before the holiday. But I think this year's going to be a Halloween like we haven't witnessed, and you know, certainly nothing in my life, you know, lifetime. I've never seen anything like that.
Nor mine, for sure. I you know, it's funny that you mentioned the Halloween side. Is I started seeing promotions for Halloween candy out here in our area starting back in August, which told me the confectioners in total were very nervous about what the offtake would be during this Halloween season with the unknown. Would we have trick-or-treating? Would we not? Would we see the rebound and opportunity for kids to get out there? And I just don't see it. I don't see parents wanting their kids to be out and about. And I think people probably in general wouldn't be opening their doors to start handing handfuls of candy to people. You know, it's just not an ideal situation. So, you know, here in our household, we're trying to support our confectioners out there. And we did buy a couple bags of candy, but we're not doing it on the anticipation of a lot of door ring going on. But we do feel that we should support the confectioners being in the industry. And so, you know, we did that. But I don't think people are going to stockpile on candy. And I would assume that the Halloween sales that they normally would see, and you could probably talk to this as well as anybody, is, you know, usually it's about the end of September. There's about 30-day ramp up in Halloween confection sales, you know, at the wholesale level, whether you're talking about the big box stores or the grocery stores, the retail outlets, versus, you know, perhaps maybe this elongated period of time. So when we look back and some of the big confectioners will state their Halloween sales, it won't be that they're perhaps will show such a negative because they'll probably try to include the elongated period of which they promoted this versus the normal 30-day period. Well, what do you think about that commentary?
Yeah, I mean, it's you can go back to take a look at what we've seen this year. I go back to Easter as being a seasonal holiday, and that was fresh during the outbreak. So I don't think you had a lot of the retailers that had anticipated what was going to happen at that time frame. And most, I think, you know, supermarkets or drug mass merchandise were stuck with a lot of surplus inventory that didn't sell through. That holiday was a I hate to call it this, but it was kind of an unmitigated disaster from a sales through time period. I think the retailers are doing a better job trying to promote and sell product leading up to Halloween. I've seen a lot of advertisements, and I think families like yours or people with kids are trying in some way to kind of mark the holiday and still celebrate it, although it's going to be, I think, much more subdued this year. And it begs a question whether parents will feel safe sending their kids out in groups and going, like you said, doing the doorbell ringing and getting candy from, you know, not necessarily strangers, but people in their neighborhood in light of the virus. And now that we're getting into colder weather, as we're seeing over in Europe, we've got a kind of a second wave hitting where, the infection rates are on the rise as people are indoors more because it's colder and people are indoors. And, will we see the same thing as we get into the fall months here in the U.S.? So I think we'll see a sales through period, but I think it'll much likely to be, more subdued than what we've seen in prior years. So it won't be a disaster, but it's hard to fathom that, Halloween is going to look and feel the same and have the kind of same sales volume, either, volumetrically in terms of the total pounds sold or certainly from a dollars perspective that we saw in prior years.
Yeah, I feel for all of the families that have young kids out there that are, wanting an experience to show their kids and take pictures with their costumes. And I know it's a big deal around our neighborhood. Traditionally, we have a big block party and then the dads go off with the kids and trick or treat and the moms kind of clean up from the block party and kind of get everything ready for when the kids return with their sacks full of candy. And that's just probably not going to happen. Heck, I know it's not because we typically host it here in our little cul-de-sac. So we're obviously getting to the stage where our kids aren't going to be out trick-or-treating as much as they used to, but it's still kind of one of those traditional things that we're going to start to miss. And I can only imagine that others out there are going to have the same feeling of a little bit of emptiness.
Same experience.
They're just going to not have that same experience. And dressing up is kind of that fun tradition that I know I did when I was a kid. Heck, I was Superman and a police officer and a fireman and all kinds of different things, none of which I obviously became. But it is sad. And, you know, as you wrap that up into the overall commodity flow, Jeffrey, you mentioned something on the sugar demand and confections down nearly 14%. Unfortunately, it's an interesting dynamic because you can see kind of where pockets of the sugar delivering industry and all of the big users are. And, you know, another category that we saw that was down significantly year to date was beverage, right? So we saw beverage down even further than confections. So just another example of an impact that something has over 6 months and how disastrous it could be to industries. Oh, heck, we've had way too many closures of businesses going on during this time period that may just never come back.
Right.
But interestingly enough, what did you see in some of the other things? You saw retail. So what's not being done in maybe the restaurant trade, for example, or our concession stands being empty, you did see a change in retail and that growth is up, but it's not off-taking and offsetting the lack of deliveries, say, in these other areas.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair way of stating it, that the aggregate or the sum of the total is still lower than we were a year ago. But to your point, you're seeing pockets, you know, shining. Food service may be down as people are going out to restaurants, you know, less or eating out less, and schools are closed and that segment. But you've got more at-home baking and those channels, retail, you know, cereal, you know, bakeries, they're doing really well. So it's very kind of hit or miss, but the sum of the toll is probably a decline overall.
Well, hey, I think with that, just everybody out there, we're going to wrap up today's podcast, but I wanted to thank Jeffrey for all your insights. It's a sad commentary, unfortunately, what's going on around the world in cocoa and chocolate. Hopefully, we'll see brighter days in the not-too-distant future, and we'll see some margin increase for those processors so we don't see a lot of consolidation of that industry at this time. Hey, I want to say thank you to you for all that insight. And everybody out there, please understand that, you know, we'll get through this at some point, and that hopefully we'll see a rebound in all of these commodities from the demand side. So with that, we'll wrap it up. As Mike always loves to say, live life with an attitude of gratitude. And with that, have a great weekend. Thanks, Jeffrey.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure being with you.
Cheers.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Favelle's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favelle.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.